A conversation with Blaine Richardson, Republican for Congress. Blaine Richardson of Belfast wants GOP voters in Maine's 2nd Congressional District to choose him as the party's nominee in this year's contest to take on incumbent Democrat Mike Michoud in the fall election. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll bring you another in our series of Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews. Blaine Richardson is a retired Navy veteran and business owner. He faces Maine Senate President Kevin Ray in the June 12th primary. Richardson has a simple platform, and it's centered around his belief in individual freedoms. Join the conversation. Email your questions to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. A Your Vote 2012 interview with Blaine Richardson, Republican candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. This is Maine Calling.
And Blaine Richardson, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Keith. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why should GOP Republican voters in the 2nd District choose you on June 12th to represent the party?
Because I'm a true leader. As a retired Navy captain, my life was centered around leading people, solving problems, and carrying out the wishes of the American people.
And currently, that's the representative we have now is not doing.
Well, he's won some nefarious awards for being obscure. A fine gentleman, but at the end of the day, Maine needs to be seen down there on the Hill, and we have many things here that require federal money and budgeting, the least of which is Bath Ironworks, largest employer in the state of Maine.
And we'll get to that in a second. But bigger picture, do Republican voters have a big choice here between you and Kevin Ray, the Senate president, or are there big differences?
There's a very, very big difference. You know, Kevin, by the way, has done an excellent job, you know, helping the governor move his platform forward. But he has spent his time in politics from his 20s on. I've been serving my country and been involved in small business since my 20s on, and I've done things that make me, the minute I hit the road, ready when I get to Washington, D.C.
So you're highlighting experience. Are there any ideological or policy differences?
I think there are some clear differences between you know, Kevin and I. You know, Kevin is probably, I would characterize him as Republican light. I'm the real deal. You know, I'm a conservative through and through, and that is a clear difference. We've already been down the road with Republican light, and I would suggest that he's accessory pretty much to Olympia Snowe's voting record, you know, since he spent a good amount of time on her staff and a timely amount as her chief of staff. So,
would you describe her as Republican light as well?
Yes. I mean, wonderful individual, but times are changing. You know, the country's broke. We're out of money. And we are exactly where our Congress has taken us, and she's been driving that, you know, bus along with everybody else down in Washington.
Let's talk about some of the front burner issues. Obviously, the economy is number one in the minds of many voters. What can Congress do, if anything, to stimulate the United States economy and or Maine's economy?
Well, Keith, I think, you know, the first thing is Washington needs to get out of the way of the entrepreneur. We are choked as small businesses, you know, starting with the IRS and just the disbursement of, you know, the profit any of us make. But then environmental regulations are smothering us, and they have pretty much smothered Maine out of business. It breaks my heart. You drive around the state and the mills are gone, and The shoe factories are gone. The tanneries are gone. Make no mistake that the environmental regulations that come down from the EPA have had a strong hand in that.
Free trade probably has also. What's your position on free trade? Should we do more of it, less of it, or just do it differently?
Well, free trade's sort of interesting. I'm going to come at it, you know, from a little different angle. As we started creeping up corporation tax here in this country, companies chose to walk. Over a long period of time, our corporate tax here in America has stifled. Now we hold the distinction of having the highest one in the country. But a lot of countries just picked up and went. You know, Briggs & Stratton, for instance, went across the border in Mexico. Well, once they go offshore, the products they make are no longer American. They may be iconic American, but in order to get them back on shore again, you need free trade agreements, you know, to get the very products that used to be made here back here.
And so that's all in the details of the agreement. It's not, you wouldn't favor, you know, what some might characterize as protectionism.
Oh, I don't think protectionism on any level is serving anybody well. But the problem we have is with high corporate taxes, we drive our large manufacturers offshore. And if we could get the – and that's one of the other things that would help the economy along. You know, cut the corporate tax, cut these taxes that are, you know, really hamstringing all business.
You hear in the tax debate, particularly now, we should make the wealthy Americans pay their fair share, I think, is how it's termed.
Well, I think that everyone needs to pay their fair share. We have a lot of people, you know, I'll use the state of Maine as an example. About 50% of the state is not paying taxes, but they're still using the infrastructure and the services that the rest of us who are paying taxes are paying for. And so having said that, we need to find another way of taxation at a federal level, local level, other than this 4,000-page document that in itself creates an industry, and get to a tax that everybody pays. You know,
is it a flat tax?
Yeah, flat tax. You know, not being, you know, the dollars and the cents of this not being, you know, my hallmark, there are people out there that understand how to put something like this together. And I think we really, as a country, need to get there.
Do we need the IRS?
We'll probably need some form of it. But, you know, over the last 60 years, the tax code, the environmental code, is really the product of a lot of lawyers working a long time to create a very complicated process. It doesn't matter whether it's the environment or it's tax. And as I said, it's created an industry all of its own. There'll be a lot of upset CPAs and tax attorneys, you know, if we go to a flat tax, and you better believe that they're not going to lobby for one. So,
our listener, Robert, writes in on Facebook basically saying, We've already had years and years of Bush tax cuts. This experiment of reducing taxes on the higher earners to generate the economy. How long do we have to wait for it to work? Is Robert's question.
Well, I think you know, you look at the growth of this country, you know, pre-60s, and the country was doing fine without these departments that we have created. And to me, these various departments that we have no control over as voters have, they create incredible drag for the American craft to move forward, and it employs a lot of people, but it's a very expensive process. It just slows everything down.
I guess he's saying, do lower taxes really work, or?
Oh, absolutely. All we have to do is go back to President Kennedy. I mean, if President Kennedy was, you know, alive and well today, he'd probably be looked at as a Republican. His tax cuts, you know, just absolutely launched the country on a, you know, a strong growth wave.
Join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Blaine Richardson is the one of the two Republican candidates running in the 2nd Congressional District primary on June 12th. Affordable Care Act, good idea, bad idea?
Really bad idea. Again, this comes back to, you know, individual responsibility. In the Declaration of Independence, where we sort of enumerated our God-given rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness doesn't necessarily mean that equal adults born equally will generate the same equal outcome. And I truly believe that no one is entitled to another man's craft. I don't care what it is. You're entitled to whatever you can, you know, beg, borrow, steal, afford, or barter for, and it's pretty simple. If we do the health care, you know, when will it be everybody's entitled to a car, or pick anything?
So you support the sort of the status quo of the free market system?
Well, it isn't totally a free market system. The medical industry is actually shackled by the insurance companies, and I'm not quite sure how we disengage and untangle them. But a start would be allowing health care to be purchased anywhere an individual can find it. Number two, meaning across state borders, and then number two, tort reform. I mean, you know, I have a friend of mine that's a surgeon, and he pays over $250,000 a year for liability insurance. That goes to an insurance company, and it doesn't make anybody any better.
Sure. Sorry, you're very succinct. You caught me off guard. 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. I skipped over a question in our discussion about the economy, and one was the high cost of energy, which affects businesses in Maine, especially manufacturing, but all businesses. What can Congress do, if anything, to lower that cost of energy?
Well, again, if we can get the Department of Energy to do anything, so far the only thing they've ever delivered to the American citizens for the billions of dollars that have been spent on their budget has been the curly fry light bulb that's loaded with mercury. But number one, there's no shortage of oil in North America, including the lower 48 states. Right now, the government can't control Pennsylvania oil fields or Texas oil fields because they're private, and that is where our increase in production is coming from. But if the government just, you know, got out of the business of trying to control and regulate where we produce oil and gas, we'd be in wonderful shape.
Would you support offshore drilling off the coast of Belfast?
Oh, I'd support offshore drilling anywhere. The problem is you don't need to do offshore drilling if you go after the continental oil and on the north slopes of Alaska, run the pipeline from the oil sands in Canada down to the Gulf Coast, and open up federal lands here in the lower 50. It's a control thing, and there are global politics involved here. If we unrestricted our on-land drilling here in this country, arguably we would drop our barrel price anywhere between 10 to 15%, which would take care of OPEC running the program. America has the reserve.
Nuclear power?
I'm an absolute proponent for nuclear power. The Navy are the experts on nuclear power. They make reactors that can sustain direct hits. And the technology has matured from its inception. And the current nuclear reactors and the fuel rod situation, we only use about 5% of the energy in a given fuel rod before it's retired. If we process those rods and use them in breeder reactors the way they do in Europe, then we can extract you know, 50% to 60% more of the power, and also reduce the storage problem with the waste.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, share your thoughts, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Blaine Richardson, candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. We'll be right back.
PRI's The World brings you more than just today's news.
I had an interview once, and the guy said, so what was it like taking the cameras to your village and the elders seeing these cameras for the first time? You know, these soul-capturing contraptions, you know, how did they feel about that? You know, we've had TV there for like 60 years.
I'm Marco Werman. Join us and hear The World.
Tune in for The World this afternoon at 3.
On the next Fresh Air, Sissy Spacek talks about her new memoir. She became famous for Carrie, playing an outcast high school student with telekinetic powers. She was 25 when she auditioned. To look younger, she wore a sailor dress her mother made her in 7th grade, and
if I didn't brush my teeth, I didn't wash my face, I put Vaseline in my hair so it would look dirty and a little unkempt.
Join us.
Tune in for Fresh Air tonight at 7. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by listeners like you and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine. The happiest people in business. Garand.com. And by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we continue our Your Vote 2012 interview series with a conversation with Blaine Richardson, Republican candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. It's a lot to get through, but it's the modern era. Let's go to the phones now and to Belfast, your country, and to Wells. Hi, Wells. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I was listening earlier on the radio back to the topic of energy. I was wondering what Mr. Richardson's thoughts would be on the use of natural gas in this country.
Thanks for the question, Wells. Natural gas is a very important component to where we go in the future here in Maine, as well as the rest of the nation. The redrilling that's happening in the Texas oil fields, the Pennsylvania Standard Oil fields, and up in the Dakotas, if they're not able to actually collect and pipe the gas, they're actually reinjecting it into the ground as storage. We have huge natural gas resources, and as a matter of fact, we're in the process of gasifying Bangor, Maine now, and as I understand, a week or two ago, an agreement was signed to gasify Rockland. It makes no sense to burn number two oil for heat. It's too valuable in the production of products, jet fuel, train fuel, where it really gets to do a big bang for the buck. But natural gas is going to play a key role. And also in our truck fleets, the natural gas can be liquefied and run diesel engines. And we're in the process right now of major truck fleets like Walmart and UPS and whatnot that are doing transcoastal transportation are gasifying.
Yeah, so I was going to say, how do we get the gas here?
Well, the gas, we actually have a pipeline that runs right down Maine from Sable Island to Boston, and I believe it's this line that we're starting to tap off of. Obviously, in Maine, it gets a little difficult because of ledge and the fact that we're so close to the, you know, the hard crust of the earth. We have very little surfacal cover here, but I'm really pleased that we are making this commitment.
Let's go to Camden, another energy question. And is it Beatty? I'm sorry.
It's Beatty.
Beatty.
Yeah, I have a question.
Welcome
about
to the program.
Mercury.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I noticed that you were worried about mercury in light bulbs, but also a certain amount of hostility towards EPA and environmental regulations. I wondered what you thought about the mercury coming down wind onto Maine from the coal power plants that are not really sufficiently regulated. I have family and friends who have high mercury levels.
Beatty, that is really a good question. And a bunch of years back, Governor McKernan appointed me to be on a DEP committee, the P2 committee, which was directly involved with chemicals like mercury and how they fit into the Maine environment. I don't want any mercury, and we don't have to have it in these power plants. As a matter of fact, the cement plant in Thomaston, Maine, put in scrubbers. They burn coal. In fact, they can burn many fuels, and they use limestone dust, and it's called slacking, and they are able to catch 99.999% of all heavy metals and other toxins that are a product of coal. And that technology, we have limestone everywhere in this country. That technology can be applied anywhere. I don't give anybody a pass on doing anything dirty, because we do have the science and the technology today. We need to use it. We need coal for coal-fired power plants. This country is rich, but, you know, we need to spend the extra dollars and scrub the smokestacks.
Well, you sounded as though you were hostile to environmental regulations, so it must be some yes, some no.
Well, you know, the regulation part of it, one of my real platforms is, you know, our individual responsibility and sovereignty, and there's no reason why we can't hold any industry responsible. The science is out there. The engineering is out there. We have numerous engineering companies right here in Maine that help us when we're doing projects that affect the environment. And I think that what we need to do is start using peer review with these engineering companies and move ahead that way. The problem with departments like the EPA or the Energy Department or the Department of Education, there's no accountability to the voter. Absolutely none. They are political appointees, and their ideology goes with the wind.
We're going to jump around a little bit here. There's a lot to get to. I wanted to talk about Social Security and what you think we should do. Is it in trouble? Is it in trouble of running out of money? And if so, should we save it, or what should we do?
Oh, absolutely. Social Security itself is not broken. Social Security got broken by a Congress that spent the trust and didn't replenish it. You know, they saw this big pot of money and they went after it. Also, the program expanded from, you know, being a program to ensure that people in their older years had something to fall back on to providing funds. And it all sounds good, but this is what broke it. Taking care of people with disabilities and children with disability. It got turned into something that it had never been designed for, and now it's running out of money.
Should we do means testing for
Social Well, Security? I think that one of the things we could do, we have Medicare and Medicaid that works relatively well in this country, that, you know, people that we've put on SSI, disability or whatnot, should be handled in a different way through Medicare and Medicaid with compassion.
All right, we're going to go to the first district, but because we mentioned Robert earlier in an email, we're going to go to Robert now, who responds to your that question earlier. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. You referenced the tax rate that President Kennedy cut to as a good example of an effective tax rate as a means of improving the economy. Would you recommend going to that tax rate now, seeing as we know that that's a tax rate that improved the economy, and that's an example of what you think would be a tax rate? Because
it's
effectively about double what the tax rate is now. It's probably more than triple what Mitt Romney is paying, and I still have yet to get an answer from any Republican candidate on how long we should wait for the Bush tax cuts to work. We've waited 11 years. Where are the jobs? If tax cuts work, where are the jobs?
I'll tell you where the jobs are, Robert. I am an individual that creates jobs. I built houses, okay? My wife and I would do a house a year.
The question is, how long does it take for the tax cuts to work?
And if I'll tell you, it takes exactly as long as it takes Congress to stop spending money at an uncontrolled rate. Both parties. We have a government now that is consuming the general population, and it produces nothing. It just collects money and spends it. There's no capital production whatsoever, and it's gotten bigger. And
what family says, let's balance the budget by reducing our income? Seriously, what business model says, let's get to be a more profitable business or a business on better economic footing by reducing our income? You still haven't answered the question, how long does it work?
Taxes, Robert, have reduced my income. Do you get that? FICA,
the tax. They pay for all the things that help you earn your income. Taxes pay for your entire military career.
My military career is sanctioned by Robert. You need to go back to the Constitution. There are two things that we decided that we would spend money on mutually.
Okay, let
you're still dancing around the question.
All right, let Blaine finish, please.
The Constitution provides for our mutual defense. It also provides for a postal service. Okay, it doesn't provide the money that has been spent over the years through the total, expansion and prolapse and harpooning of the Commerce Act. And government invented itself through the Commerce Act. It is totally out of control. There are so many things that we're spending money for in this federal government that have nothing to do with anything other than redistribution of somebody else's money.
We have an email from David in Brunswick who says, given your belief in the free market system, should we do away with agencies trying to regulate Wall Street, A, or should we cut the defense budget to help ease the national deficit?
I can see cutting the defense budget, but you have to decide what you want, and I'll be very succinct. The Senate was given a charge to come up with budget cuts and spending cuts, and as you all know, that committee came up with nothing, so now we're on a default cut, which in essence will cut the defense budget by about a half a trillion dollars. And one of the things that does, interestingly enough, it's going to wipe out the production and manufacturing of roughly 9 fast attack submarines. And people say, well, why does that matter? Well, I'll tell you why it matters. If you drive down to Portland, there's a huge scrap metal pile there, and that scrap iron goes to China. And China is in the process right now of building a large navy. China wants to be in charge of the Pacific Ocean. Okay, now I'll remind you, the Pacific Ocean comes right up against California and Alaska, and the only way you can control somebody else's navy if they have nefarious intentions is with submarines and a strong defense.
Speaking of national defense.
National defense, absolutely.
And the question of how we use it. How did we do in Iraq and Afghanistan in terms, A, from the decision to go there and do these things? And what do we do going, this is a big question, but we're covering as much as we can. The situation in Iran where tensions are growing. Should the United States be in these places and playing an active role, an aggressive role?
Having spent 30 years in the profession of arms, I have some very strong positions on that. And right off the bat, it's time to be out of Afghanistan, period. We met the objective. That was getting bin Laden. We don't need to have a military footprint there. We can reach out and touch Afghanistan from the Indian Ocean and other locations. Iraq, we went in there, be it good, be it bad intelligence. I can say with authority that some of our intelligence departments didn't serve either President Clinton or President Bush very well. But at the end of the day, for whatever reason, we ended up in Iraq, and we took out Iraq's government. And Iran has a worldview, and their worldview is beginning with the Persian Empire, of which Iraq used to be a part, and they'd love to incorporate Iraq. So we're sort of stuck with the responsibility of guardianship of Iraq until they're able to do it themselves. But we are not the world's policemen. And having done this for 30 years, it became very apparent the older I get is that we prosecute wars with our young adults, and never believing that I was one when I went in. But that's what we do. And it better be in our direct national interest before we deploy our people abroad.
All right, we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions for Blaine Richardson, candidate for Congress. Please stay with us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman says we're in an economic depression and we've got to act to end it. He joins us. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point tonight at midnight here on MPBN Radio. Broadcast of Your Vote 2012 Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners' support and by AARP Maine, working to protect Social Security and Medicare. More information online at aarp.org/me. By Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, garand.com. And by Lambert Coffin, celebrating 25 years of delivering strategic legal counsel on issues and opportunities in Maine, with offices in Portland and Blue Hill.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Blaine Richardson, GOP candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Blaine Richardson owns a construction company and is a retired Navy veteran. He's a resident of Belfast. Let's go to Northport and Kay. Hi, Kay. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that Mr. Richardson was referring to the 64 tax cuts that were recommended by John F. Kennedy and actually implemented under Lyndon B. Johnson. But that reduced the top marginal rate from 91% to 70%. And it reduced it to 14% for the lower income people. So I think that comparing what we have now to the 1964 tax cuts is a little disingenuous.
Okay. My point isn't in comparison. My point is in the effect. And what we understand is the more money that you take from the private sector, I don't care who you take it from. It makes no difference. The guy at the bottom, the guy at the top, that's less money for them to spend with their own discretion. We need to find a way. Because we are a country with a huge infrastructure, it's greatest country on earth, and we're benevolent. If we're going to meet our needs, we have to find a way of doing it in a fair and equitable way. We can take all the money that all the old families and new families and Gates and whatever. We are so in debt, $15 trillion. I defy anybody to tell me. Describe an object that would represent $15 trillion. We are broke as a nation. So we can keep sucking the money out of the citizens to keep this big government monster alive till there's nothing left. And I would argue there's probably some people that want to do that. If we want to keep this country going on a good path, we have one of the greatest economic engines on earth, and we need to allow it to work. We need to put some of the oil back into it.
You were talking earlier about Senator Olympia Snowe, who is exiting the Senate after many years of service. And she cites kind of the loss of civility, the polarity in the Senate, the loss of civility. Does she have a point, or is that what this politics is all about? Standing your ground and taking a hard line.
I think the civility thing is sort of a red herring. I think it's probably more civil than it was back when the founding fathers were out there, you know, calling other guys' wives prostitutes, and I mean it was awful. But the ideology is a very important thing. When I was 11 years old, I lived in Copenhagen, Denmark, and I went into Berlin several times with my father before the wall went up, and then saw the wall go up. And during the Persian Gulf War, I was there when the wall came down, and I was one of the military representatives in Bonn when the first unified parliament of Germany met. And I'm here to tell you that socialism, Marxism, fascism, national socialism, they're all the same thing. Don't work. And that's the path we've been flirting with over the last 60 years, both parties. And unless you empower the individual, it's lost, because there are always those that won't pull their load. That doesn't mean we don't help the ones that can't pull the load. We're talking about the ones that can and choose not to.
Do you support the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision?
It's the law of the land.
Another Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, which has to do with campaign financing, essentially opened the doors for corporations to be viewed as citizens in terms of giving and being active politically. You support that?
I do and I don't. It's a real dilemma. Corporations are not individuals. Individuals make a corporation. I think that, you know, the Federal Elections Commission really needs to come up with a way of, you know, putting a ceiling on individual donations or something to that effect. But I think when corporations can come out and just lay huge money down, this is really a nation of sovereign people trying to get their work done. And when it's taken over by huge entities, it needs to be straightened out.
All right, let's go to Lyman and Mary Lou. Hi, Mary Lou. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Go ahead with your question, please.
Okay, well, you know, first of all, I appreciate listening to things that are being discussed today. And being that we live in the Pine Tree State and we have a renewable resource called wood, and we are about to go to our national forest and remove wood that has fallen, what do you think of assisting those companies to expedite the testing at a more affordable rate of some of the gasification outdoor wood boilers or biomass boilers that we have in the state?
Well, I think, you know, Maine's blessed. It actually has the largest wilderness east of the Mississippi, and we also have a working forest, and it has more wood cellulose biomass on the stump standing right now than it had 600 years ago before the Europeans got here. And I think that Maine, in a environmental way, has every right to use the resources it has here. I don't want any regulation that in any way impairs the use of using our working forest.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, we are certainly helping the local loggers and the businessmen to maintain their integrity and put food on the table. We certainly aren't doing any damages. I don't recall having a logging truck outside of it being unfortunate if it went through somebody's house and killed somebody, which happened recently. You do not have the BEP or the EPA coming in for a log spill, so to speak.
Mary Lou, are you involved? Are you involved in gasification, personally? Or?
Personally, yes. Actually, my husband and I have been proponents of burning wood. We haven't burned oil in about 10 years, and we're very proud of that. And we're using a natural resource.
Great. Thanks for calling. We're going to try to fit in a couple of quick questions to Robert, who lives in Gouldsboro. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I'd like to know a couple of quick things. One is, have you signed a no-tax pledge? And the other question is, what is your health insurance provider today, and how did you like your health care while you were on active duty in the Navy? And what did you do in the Navy? Actually, three questions. Thank you for taking my question. I'll go off the air.
Okay, number one, yes, I signed the tax pledge. Number two, it's sort of two and three sort of blend together. I have to tell you, in flight training when I was 22, went down in an aircraft and spent 8 months getting put back together again by the Navy. I got to tell you, they did a really good job. I was turned 62 on the 27th of this month, and I'm firing on all cylinders. Now, as a captain in the Navy Reserve, I did not collect my pension. It's a modest pension until I turned 60, and along with that, health care. What I have to tell you is that I was 40% disabled from that aircraft accident, and pretty much all my vital parts have been covered and treated by the VA, which I can't say enough about. And what I'll tell every veteran out there, no one will take better care and represent a veteran more aggressively than another veteran.
But I can hear listeners now saying, well, wait a minute, you have health care that's paid for essentially by the government, and yet...
Well, I paid dearly. You know, when I went into that flight program, you know, I had all my physical attributes, and in about 8 seconds, they were all compromised. So the promise the government makes, that this country makes, is that those that go into profession of arms, some pay dearly, but we'll take care of what's left of the veterans when they're done serving their country. My injuries are service-connected, and, you know, rightfully so, the government should take care of any veteran that has service-connected injuries.
And with that, we're out of time.
Thank you, Keith.
Blaine Richardson, thanks so much for being here. Blaine Richardson, a Republican candidate for Maine's 2nd Congressional District. You can listen to our interview and other interviews on our Facebook page or at the MPBN website and click on the radio tab. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. Who also answered your calls. Lindsay Maynard ran the board. We had additional help from the MPBN web team, John Bradford and John Keimel. I'm Keith Shortall, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.